What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of 5280 Nerd. I am one of your hosts, Michael McCartney.
And I am the other, Sean Porter. Thank you guys so much for joining us. This is episode 35. How was your week, buddy?
Bro, it was incredible. I have a big announcement. I got to see Batman vs. Superman earlier.
I hate you.
I know, dude. I lucked out so bad. I'll tell the story a little. Well, I'll just tell right now. Why not? So early in the week, it was Tuesday, a friend of mine who works for Chrysler got some tickets to go see Batman vs. Superman early, a pre-screening in Brighton, Colorado. The reason that he got the tickets is Jeep is part of Chrysler, and I don't know if our listeners or Sean, you've seen these commercials for the Jeep Renegade that is featured in Batman vs. Superman.
Sure, yeah.
So they paid for a lot of advertising, Jeep and Chrysler did, for the film. So they gave them a bunch of pre-screening things. So I got to see it on Tuesday, and I'm going to go see it again tomorrow with some other friends who haven't seen it yet. And I know, Sean, you're going to go see it tomorrow, which is a Saturday, so a day after it has come out already. So pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'm going to go see it tomorrow morning. Super jealous you got to see it already.
I know. The thing is, we had an extra ticket, too, but by the time we had gotten there, it started at 7, and it was like 6:30 by the time we figured out we had another ticket, and it was like in Brighton, and the theater was packed, too, so you would have had to like sit in the front. And it would have been.
Yeah. No worries, man. Well, I'm glad you got to go. I'm excited to hear kind of your spoiler-free review of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for all you guys that are listening, Mike is not going to give anything away. Don't worry. But yeah, he was actually telling me a really cool story. You should tell them about, like, I don't know if any of you guys have gone to pre-screens before. Me and my wife actually went to, like, a Harry Potter one. But they're, like, very particular about what happens in there. Mike, why don't you share, like, what it was like with, like, the Chrysler people and then the theater people?
Yeah, it was actually pretty crazy. So it was a nice theater, AMC theater. Brighton is kind of a small town in Colorado. So it was just, I don't know, it's just really nice theater. So there was a guy there, you know, everybody in the theater is asking, how do you get these how do we see it early? Like, all these people, they're like, you can't. You either have a ticket or you don't. And so there was this Warner Brothers guy who's like from California, Warner Brothers, who I guess flies out for these pre-screenings. They have a bunch of people that do this. And so we're sitting down, we're waiting for the movie to start. And before it starts, the guy like gets everybody to be quiet and is like, okay, listen up. This is what is going to happen. You are going to turn off your phones right now. And if I catch any of you even looking at your phone, like your phone has to be off. If I see anything, you're going to get kicked out of the whole theater. Like, we're going to escort you out of the building and we'll check your phone for pictures or videos. And they're like, if there's anything on there, you will get a $2,000 fine and you might, you know, be convicted with jail time. Like, it is a fucking serious, serious thing. So during the movie, he actually had like this night vision thing that it was like night vision goggles, but it was like one lens instead of two. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like you hold it in one hand and kind of look through it. Not quite like binoculars, but yeah, it's night vision. He's like, I'll be watching all of you, so please don't make me have to do that, blah, blah, blah. So it's pretty intense, man. Like, and even before the movie, Sean, like, there was like this like 3-minute message from Zack Snyder, the director, who was just like, hey, we're giving you guys this, you know, access before everyone else in the world. So take that as a privilege. And he was just really just encouraging, like, don't spoil it for anybody else. We really want this film to be special for everybody. So it was pretty shocking the extent that they went through just for a showing. I felt special. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like serious.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was good. But, well, yeah, I feel like I've been talking a lot. How was your week? Did we even get to your week? What's going on with you, buddy?
Oh, no, same old, man. Just we are under contract for a house, like I mentioned last week, and still pushing forward on that. We had our inspection of the home went really well. We have to do, like, our appraisal to make sure, like, they're asking a normal, reasonable amount. But, like, any house right now, I don't feel like any house is a normal, reasonable amount.
No, no.
Because they all cost too much money. But yeah, man, things are going good. We're getting pretty excited. Hopefully it all pans out and works out. I'm sure it'll be fine. But yeah, man, just super excited to see this movie also. And we kind of had like a little mini blizzard in Colorado last week, like a couple days ago, actually.
Yeah.
Here in Colorado. So I know Micah got to stay home and I worked from home. But yeah, kind of shut our city down for like a day. And
yeah,
the nice thing about Colorado is the sun's always shining. So it kind of came and went. The streets are kind of clear now already and snow's quickly melting away. But yeah, man, the week was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of exciting stuff going on. So
absolutely. I know. Me and Sean have been, like I said, we talked about last week, we've been waiting so long for Batman vs. Superman. And like Sean said, not this episode, but after Sean sees it, you know, probably our next episode, right, Sean? That's going to be like, you better go see Batman vs. Superman. That's all we're going to pretty much talk about.
Yeah,
and
for
sure. We're just going to pick it apart. So please go see it if you're listening to this podcast, because next week there will be spoilers, so be prepared so you can listen in on it.
So what's like your spoiler-free review? Did you like it? I've heard some backlash from critics, and I've heard some great things from people I actually respect. So what's your thoughts so far?
Well, let me first off start by saying I was really salty about all the bad publicity this movie's getting. It just doesn't make any sense, especially after I've seen the movie. I think people just have preconceived notions about Ben Affleck, and they feel like, you know, Man of Steel was a good movie, but it wasn't like a renowned, like very popular movie. So I think that people also are a little salty or upset because maybe they didn't see Man of Steel, and Batman vs. Superman and Man of Steel are like essentially the same movie. It's literally what's happening in Man of Steel is happening in Batman vs. Superman. And so I think people who didn't watch that are lost. They don't understand what's going on. They're just like, this doesn't make sense. There's too much story going on, and they're lost. I really don't know the reasoning behind it, but it really got me upset. I was really disappointed in Polygon. I was really disappointed in Rotten Tomatoes. A lot of sites, Sean, that I know me and you both like, look to them for content and look to them for like, we sure. respect their opinions. And I lost a lot of respect for a lot of these companies and reviewers, because there's no reason. Like, I can understand them saying, oh, it was average. But, like, people, Sean, really ripped into it and was like, this movie's the worst. I can't even believe DC put this out. Like, totally ripped into it and said it was just garbage. Don't even see it. Not that pissed me off. So, yeah, don't believe the rumors. I mean, I think the movie's phenomenal, but even if you don't know anything about DC Universe or you didn't see Man of Steel, this is still an exciting, action-packed, really good production and a side of Batman that we haven't seen before. And Henry Cavill, I think, is the best Superman ever in cinematography, even more than Christopher Reeves. But to the review... like I said, this is spoiler-free. I'm not going to ruin anything. All I'm going to say is the thing that I enjoyed the most is, Sean, there is a lot of Easter eggs and there are a lot of undertones to the Justice League. Like, this is... They strongly hint on several things about how this is the beginning of the Justice League.
Nice.
I can't say anything more than that because I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but I was shocked at the amount of things that were in the movie that I was like, oh my gosh, they are really pushing this hard. Like, this is the beginning, you know? And, yeah, I'm trying to think of how else I can word different things. I do think that the trailer still gave away a little bit too much, you know, Sean, like we had talked about previously. But that didn't ruin it for me. There's still, they didn't show the best parts of the movie for sure. I can 100% vouch and say that there's way better scenes and parts, in the movie. I mean, all the actors did great. Amy Adams did phenomenal. She's a great Lois Lane, and she actually plays a pretty big role in this film, Sean. Bigger than I thought. And also Lex Luthor, by Jesse, what's his
Eisenberg?
Last? Yes, he did a phenomenal job as Lex Luthor. I think he really captured the role how I would picture Lex Luthor in the comic books. just a crazy person, but crazy brilliant. And I think that that's what it needed. Not just like a businessman who's evil, like Kingpin, you know, he's just plays this like lunatic. And I really like that. So, Jesse Eisenberg played a big part in the movie as well. And in from the, I didn't know how big of a part he would play in the trailers. So, yeah, I think everyone will be very surprised, and you don't, you'll know the plot from the trailers, but there's still a lot more to see and a lot more meat to chew on. So I think that's about all I can say without ruining anything whatsoever. But I think everyone's going to really enjoy it. It lived up to my expectations. Saying it exceeded my expectations, I would say it did a little bit, but I had it at a high standard. So it's a great movie. It's very good. Well done. And I had reservations, you know, about Ben Affleck. And Sean, I gotta say, he did a really good Batman. He did a really great job. So really glad, really satisfied, as like, this is the mecca of my, of everything for me. Like it's a big part of my life. So just to know that he did good was very, a big relief for me. So.
Yeah, man. You know what? I've never really bought into like the reviewer hype, and I know that we review things, but we do it out of hopefully like the best place we can. We feel like we give our honest review of things. But like, I feel like mainstream Hollywood, mainstream media, they definitely like, they'll get a twinge up their butt about something, or like, you know, from the get-go, people have slammed Ben Affleck for playing. They just had this like preconceived, like the day it was announced, they're gonna hate it, and I feel like that's just built all the way up till now. And it just seems like they kind of had it out for this movie from the beginning, and no matter what happened, they were just not gonna like it. But irregardless of what they think, there's a ton of movies that I really, really love that critics hate.
Yeah,
it's doing amazing. I mean, they said Thursday night, the night it opened, they made $27.7 million in one night.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So, yeah, and right now they are on track to be the highest pre-summer box office weekend in all time, of all time. If any movie of any genre, they're going to blow. They're already blown past Hunger Games, which is a huge success for a long time.
Yeah.
They're projected to hit, I don't know what it was, like 157 million to 170 million by the end of the weekend.
Yeah.
Worldwide. I guess they like crushed it in China. It's like open. It's doing huge. It's like one of the largest movies of all time to come out. So yeah, definitely going to see a lot more. They invested a lot. They're getting the return on it, irregardless of what some reviewers might think. I'm super excited to see it. You know, like I said, from everybody whose opinions I care about said they loved it. Mike is definitely one of those people, and he loves it. So super excited. We're, like Micah said, we're definitely going to dive in pretty hard to this next week. So hopefully you guys have a chance to go see it. If not, maybe skip next week until you go see it, and then listen to the episode. But the last thing that we had in our 2 cents section, we wanted to kind of give our final verdict of The Division, Tom Clancy's new game. So what's your final verdict on it, buddy? We've played it for a couple weeks now. I think I'm at like 18 now.
Yeah, I did play some of the Dark Zone, and so that's the, you know, player versus player type in-game content of it. Just to get a taste to see if I was missing out on anything. And I gotta say, it really didn't sweeten the deal for me on the game, which is pretty disappointing. Sean, our first impression was exactly what this game was. It was very shallow. And I've been talking a lot, so I'm going to stop because I want to get your opinion. But I feel like this game is super average. I'm sticking with my 7 on it. It is... Honestly, I wouldn't buy this game until the price went down, and then you could get a solid like 48 hours out of it, and then you might just get sick of it because you just do the same damn thing over and over again. So what about you, Sean?
I'll agree with you. I'm maybe not as harsh on it as you are. I think it is a 7. I think it was good for what it was. I felt like, as far as like third person shooters go, I think it was pretty average and typical. I think that was their biggest problem, is that they were like so, I don't know if they were just so concerned with trying a new title that they went as generic as they could. They tried to take all these proven successes and they tried to pull the best parts out of them and make this one mash of things that like just kind of had no soul to it. There was like not really a lot of story and emotion to it. I don't know. I'm really big on to like good stories. Yeah. For me to play it a lot, it has to have like something that really captures me. But like you said, like, which it's a big problem for a lot of like massive world third person shooter games that you have to run and collect like over and over and over and over and over and over and over. I mean, that's just that's the gameplay of them. I mean, from Elder Scrolls, The Division, any of those games, that's just what you're gonna do. So keeping my attention is important as far as like building a structure in a game and a story that's going to keep me interested, coming up with fresh new content is super important. And then I guess I see like the side of the Dark Zone stuff as far as like player versus player. But yeah, it wasn't as fun. I think Destiny tried to do the same thing. They tried to make player versus player a big part of it and it just wasn't working out. It just didn't land there either. Whereas like other games do it successfully for some reason. Halo, you know, their story was really good and really great, and it spanned so long. But their player versus player is super on point, and I think that's probably their biggest success is player versus player. I mean, Halo just had its world championships for like $1 million prize and all this stuff. So obviously they did something right. Same with Battlefield and like Modern Warfare. Those games all have good stories, but like they're big presence is player versus player. So
yeah, I agree, that's another great point. I mean, the story and the Division, I mean, there was no fucking story. They literally start you off and they're like, yeah, they're smallpox, yeah, you're the last sleeper agent, you're the last defense, and then that's pretty much it. No one cares about it. It's not compelling at all, and very, very disappointing. I mean, you gotta do better than that.
It was really like half-assed. It was like literally, like Micah said, it was a big event happened, the city gets overrun by like criminals, and you're trying to help build like stations and bases back up so that they could fight back against this sickness and criminal element that, and it's like pretty wildly based. I mean, like your villains are dudes rocking around with like flamethrowers and like you're supposedly like this crazy like sleeper agent, and you have like all these crazy machine guns and stuff, and like do you just run at you with like handguns and flamethrowers and baseball bats for some reason. And so it gets really tedious really fast, but it's I will say it's like beautifully created. Like the graphics are on point, the huge map play is pretty seamless. I mean,
yeah,
It's cool. Like I get like the aspect of like it's like a catch 22 that you want this big expansive map that you could go and explore and find things, but when you're trying to work through the game, it does become kind of tedious when you have to run all the way across this huge map, or you have to even fast track takes forever. I feel like it loads too slow.
Yeah.
And then there's that still that whole issue with like if you don't play with your friends at the same time, you guys get off a little ways, a couple levels different.
Right.
It just becomes so much harder.
That's a good point.
So
then you
gotta play by yourself to catch up, and like there's just a lot of weird little inconsistencies.
And actually, Sean, I found a remedy to fix that. So Clarence started the Division, he bought it, and I just started a new character and started with him. That's literally the only way you can do it. I mean,
yeah.
You can't, because if I was going to wait for him, he'd have to put in like 20 hours to catch up to me.
For sure.
And
at the same time, but you don't want to like, say you played a character and you got to 20 or 25, and then your friend finally bought the game or whatever, you're going to have to start over, and then to keep your other player going, you're going to have to play with other people, and you're switching characters all the time.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's something that could, I think, be remedied, even if they like, they halved it. Like, if you played with somebody that was a 10 and you're a 15, just put the guys at 13 or something.
Right.
I think there's a lot easier ways that they could have remedied it. But
yeah. I just think it's average. I mean, it's not a bad game, but it's not a great game. So.
All right. Well, that was our verdict. Still 7. get it if you want. Maybe wait till it, you know, drops in price a little bit, or maybe it's one to miss. I don't know. It's up to you guys. We're kind of iffy on it. It's an okay title. I would say buy it if you're interested in third-person shooters and all, but
yeah,
don't expect much. So
yeah, and that's a fair review. So
yeah, all right. Well, jumping into the news, we got some more Xbox news. Xbox exec Phil Spencer at the Halo World Championship, so we were just talking about. He made some pretty bold statements. He feels like, and he predicts that esports will be as big as football and basketball in the future. His actual quote was, "It's so accessible; anybody can play a game. I think that there's no cap to what esports can become." And he also had more that he said other than that. He said basically, you know, games are easy to get into. Like sports, they require a lot of practice, teamwork, dedication to rise to the top. Which are all things that we've talked about in the past with esports. It's interesting to see how these executives are really pushing for it. I mean, more than any time in gaming history do we see, like, competitions sprouting up everywhere. There's whole television networks that are starting to become dedicated to esports, whole websites, whole game genres. It's a big deal, and it's growing really fast and really rapidly. What do you think, Mike? Do you think this is... are we right on the cusp? Are we going to see this soon, that we're going to be catching up to football and basketball? I mean,
yeah, I really do think so. And some people might say that is the most insane, crazy thing. What the hell are you talking about? There's no way that it'll ever be that big. But, yeah, man, I think I did watch the Halo World Championship and CLG. Congratulations. What a freaking show. They played the best out of seven game mode types, so they'll play the best out of three and capture the flag, the best out of three and like team deathmatch, but so they play seven game modes and they do like the best out of that, but it's ultimately the best out of seven series. And CLG, Sean, won all of them. They won every game mode, so it was a total kind of let down because there was no real competition. They were just too good. Yeah. But it was still fun to watch. I had a great time watching it. It made me want to pick up Halo 5 again. I did see Phil Spencer and the whole speech that he had. And yeah, I think he's 100% right, Sean. I think it's only going to grow and get bigger and bigger and bigger. Especially if we have what is rumored for the multi-platform. You know what I mean? Like PlayStation, yeah. PC, and PlayStation 4 all being on the same thing. That's going to unite gamers, and that's going to make, I think, esports bigger as well, because if you have one Call of Duty, everybody knows how to play it, and everyone plays it together online anyway. But yeah, it's pretty fun, man. Twitch is a lot of fun to watch.
For sure, man. And, you know, and there was another interesting part that was brought up in that speech and that article, that, you know, gaming we've seen gone from a community event, like you go to an arcade to play with each other, and so like a tournament would be like a one-on-one competition on a single game, to where we got to LAN parties eventually in the 90s and early 2000s, where you were playing with your buddies, who was the best person in the room, who was the best guy out of your friends or your dorm room or whatever. And then we finally moved on to like we're playing online versions of all these games, and so it became a worldwide event. So now it's very easy to compete against people from all over the world, from all different skill sets. You know, football or basketball, for the most part, I mean, you're dealing with like either a country or your town. Like, are you the best guy in your town? You're either the best guy in your school, or you've got the best guy in your district. But instantly, you know, these kids from a very young age that they start gaming, they're instantly introduced to people all over the world, all different skill levels. All it takes is to sit down and pick up a controller and start practicing, man. And there's definitely, like sports, there's some people who have an inherent talent for it, and most people, though, do have to put a ton of work in. You know, these guys who are playing in these huge world championships play all the time. You know, I mean, play hours upon hours upon hours every day, and work with their teams, and a lot of these guys like live together in the same house and they practice every day together and they're winning these big championships and you can go watch their videos of what their daily lives are. And it's a lot of gaming, you know, it's just like a professional athlete who's working out all day long and going to training camp and all that stuff. These guys do the same thing. They live in the same house. A lot of times they work in the same office together. They're sponsored by different companies who buy their practice spaces for them. And then luckily too, I mean, there are other teams who live in different countries from each other, but they're able to jump online and play with each other all day long because it's a very fluid application like that. I mean, it's a sport that you could play from anywhere in the world together. Yeah, man, I think it has such great potential to be huge. And there's so many different kinds of games. I mean, from Rocket League, to like Madden, all the way up to like Halo and all these other different kinds of sports events or games that you want to play. I mean, there's even like Angry Bird competitions and stuff. So, I mean, it could be anything, you know, League of Legends, all that stuff like that. So it's a big bag, man. A lot of areas to jump into.
I couldn't have said it better. Yeah.
Well, we both think that's going to be a big thing. It's something we're definitely going to probably talk more and more about because it's growing so fast. I guess kind of a throwback, the next part of our news, there was a National Video Game Museum announced.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about this, Sean. I didn't hear about this at all.
Well, yeah, I was reading last week about this. So there's a grand opening. It's April 2nd. It's located in Frisco, Texas, which, fun side fact, that's like the home of Dr. Pepper. That's like Dr. Pepper Stadium is there, and that's where it was created and everything. I think that's the only thing that they're known for, other than now a video game museum. So it's supposed to be part museum, part arcade, part art gallery. At the museum, you'll find there's like different sections in it. So there's a thing called Pixel Dreams, a 1980s-inspired arcade full of timeless classics such as Asteroids, Centipede, Donkey Kong, and Space Invaders. So there's like a section of 80s games where you could go and just play these arcade games, which is really cool. Giant Pong. I saw a picture of this, and I'll definitely try to put in the show notes. But it's the classic game Pong, and it can be played on the world's largest home Pong console on a giant 15-foot TV replica from the 1970s. So it looks like a giant like Pong game that you play, and like, it's really interesting. It's really cool how they
do that. That's awesome. That'd be fun to go, like, if they had that at like a bar or something, you could play just drinking with a bunch of your friends.
Yeah, man, it seems like they put a ton of work into it, and I'll definitely try to link some of these images in there. But they went all out, man. They found all these great games. They found like the best versions of them to put in this museum. They also have a section called Head to Head Hall, a hall full of gaming stations where you can go head to head with friends, family, competitors, and tournaments. Guests may find a set of game systems and games they've never seen before, or find a tribute to their favorite games, franchises played on 10 different systems. The hall takes advantage of the museum's 12,000-plus games and will be an ever-changing area of fun. So like, they've taken all these games, they've collected, it sounds like, pretty much every game that's ever been made. So they're going to have like championships and contests there, and you could go, you know, maybe like it's Donkey Kong weekend at the museum, and you could go and compete with people against in the different levels of Donkey Kong from the first original one all the way up to whatever is out now. But yeah, so that's really cool, man. Get an opportunity to play games that maybe you've heard of but you never got to play, and cool contests and stuff.
Yeah. No, I think that's awesome. I wish I mean, we kind of have a cool thing like that in Colorado. We have the 1UP Bar, which has all those old school Atari games that you can play. But I think this would be really fun to come visit someday. Pretty cool if that exists, you know?
Yeah. Some other like kind of cool things they have there. They have the Gearbox behind the scenes, a replica of the office of Randy Pitchford, founder of Gearbox Software and creator of the games Borderlands, Brother in Arms, and Duke Nukem Forever. So like, this kind of iconic person, they made a replica of what his office looked like, or looks like. They have the timeline of consoles, so they have this like big hall of like the, you know, kind of walks you through how games have been developed and how we've gotten to where we are now. A replica of the stories and artifacts from more than 50 past and present video game consoles are available in a physical timeline, which I think would be really cool to like go and actually see the progression of things and see how fast things have changed. And then the last one that I just wanted to throw in there, there's a rare artifacts, a collection of rare artifacts will be displayed, including the only Sega Neptune prototype. So there was like a Sega that came out right before Sega pretty much died, but that never got released. An unreleased Barbie edition for the Nintendo Game Boy Pocket System. The Atari Mind Link controller, one of the only two in the world. The ultra rare RDI Helicon Laserdisc based game console for the Nintendo. World Championships cartridge from 1990. So like all these like things that never quite made it, or they only made a few prototypes. But you know, you get to see like I guess the mess ups and the successes, you know, from all these consoles. Something that we love a lot, is a big part of our lives, and hopefully probably part of your guys' lives if you're listening. Yeah, it's really interesting, man. Like we said, esports is such a big thing. There's all these you know, like Football Hall of Fame, the you know, Baseball and Basketball Hall of Fame. It's cool that there's like a national video game museum, and to see where this grows. Yeah. Even from the rise of esports.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think that's really cool. I'm glad that there's something like that that exists. And that's really cool features that they put in there. I would love to go see it one day. So, yeah, man, thanks for giving us a peek into something that I know a lot of our listeners probably didn't know that exists. So, yeah, man. All right. Well, moving right along, Sean, GameStop shares have taken a big hit. Did you hear at all about this?
I did, man. You know, it sounds like they're not doing as well as they thought they were going
to
do.
Which is surprising to me, because I still, every time I go into GameStop, and I go to several different GameStops because I just go to whatever one's most convenient to me, they're always packed and they're always busy and people are always trading in games, and it just seems to me like digital isn't quite there yet, but you can't argue with the decline of money and revenue that they're making. But I think a big part of that, Sean, is GameStop also is selling statues now. I don't know if you've seen that. They have even Batman Black and Whites that I used to collect in my hardcore comic book days. And they also have like Halo and all these other video game statues, which are very cool, but they're very expensive, and I don't know if there's a huge market for that. So I think that might be a bad investment on their part, because you know that costs them a lot of money to supply that to every single store. But what do you think, Sean?
Yeah, man. The article I was reading about the whole thing, they said that they blame the lack of big video game releases so far this quarter and a weak hardware sales. That's kind of why that things have gone down. They said their shares have declined 8.3% in the first quarter, and that their sales just aren't meeting what they were expected to. And that's not to say, like, so anyway, a big company grows, you're every year you're expected, especially a publicly traded company, you're expected to increase profit. So it's not like they're not losing money. They're still making a profit. They're just not growing as fast as they're projected to grow. And so if you're not growing, you're dying, is basically how the corporate world works. And so, yeah, they're slightly on the decline. They blame it on not, or, you know, big video game releases, which I don't really buy, because I feel like there have been a ton lately. I mean, Star Wars came out, which was a huge video game release. The new Halo. I don't know. Pretty much everything came out. I mean, there was a new
Fallout,
which was huge. The whole Destiny craze was huge. Yeah, man. I don't know. I don't know what they're really saying, that there wasn't a lot of releases. I know that there has been a hit with Nintendo not making or producing as much, but I don't know. That couldn't have been that big of a share of their market value anyways. As far as hardware goes, I mean, how long was it from Xbox 360 to Xbox One? I mean, we're not even close to, like, that gap yet. We're like a couple years in. So I think as far as like a new system coming out anytime soon, that shouldn't really affect them compared to where other sales have been. I feel like people are still buying just as much. I feel like every week I hear about new controllers or add-ons coming out for systems. We're right on the brink of the VR stuff that all these companies are starting to release. So,
and you can, I don't know. You can pre-order those at GameStop, I know for a fact. So
sure, yeah, man, and maybe it is like just big box store retail is kind of killing them out. Maybe Best Buy and Walmart is just offering better deals lately. Or I kind of wondered if it was a little more to do with like digital downloads starting to affect them more. So I know like Rocket League was almost into, I think you can only buy it digitally. I don't think you could buy a hard copy of it.
I think you're right.
But yeah, I think that stuff's becoming more prevalent. And then a lot of games you buy once, and I mean, they sell season passes right now because they expect you for at least a whole year to buy DLCs for this game.
Yeah.
So you buy a game and it's supposed to last you till the next one comes out, which could be forever now because they constantly upgrade games. I mean, they'll add whole new maps, whole new stories, you know, that are all digital downloads to your physical game.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's maybe hurting them probably more, and I'm sure they don't want to even bring up the words digital downloads. I'm sure that's like the F word to them. So
yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a mixture of all of it, to be honest with you, Sean. I think that them trying to push these statues in game in their stores or retail stores, and also I think it may have been just a slow hardware sales month, a couple months.
Sure.
And just competition and digital downloads on the rise. So I think it's probably a mixture of all of that. But pretty interesting. I'm going to keep an eye on it. They do also have a store on every freaking corner like McDonald's, which is pretty impressive. I don't know how they're making a profit with that, too. So, but yeah, pretty interesting stuff. Moving to our next topic we have on here, Sean, earlier in the week there was a rumor that Nintendo was going to quit Wii U production this year. Well, Nintendo, it got a bunch of steam and Nintendo had to address it. So Nintendo is denying the rumor that it's quitting Wii U production. So Nintendo formally denied the rumor that it was quitting production for the Wii U sometime this year in a statement to a Japanese news site, according to a translation by Kayatu, a Nintendo spokesperson, told IT Media, "This isn't an announcement from our company. For the next quarter and thereafter as well, production is scheduled to continue." So, I mean, for the next quarter and thereafter is a little vague to me. So the next 3 or 4 months and then thereafter, what's thereafter mean? I think that if it's not the end of this year, it'll be early next year, the Wii U will stop production. It has been widely known that it is a unsuccessful console for the Nintendo. The Wii was far more popular than the Wii U is. And let's see here. So let me get you some numbers. Nintendo has sold more than 12.6 million Wii U's since the console launched in 2012, which poorly contrasts with its predecessor, the Wii, which has sold more than 100 million units since 2016. So let me just say that again. 12.6 million compared to 100 million. Sean, that is insanity. That is a failure in any corporate person's mind.
Well, it was funny because I feel like the Wii came out, there was like a decent amount of time where there hadn't been a big console upgrade, and definitely from Nintendo we hadn't heard anything for a really long time, and then the Wii came out, and Wii was like such a huge deal for a long time, and then the Wii U came out not too long after, well, a little ways after the Wii, but it wasn't that big of a departure from the original Wii. I mean, it had a different controller, a lot of the same games. There wasn't really a big revolution to what it was. I mean, the Wii, I think, could definitely was an innovator in the fact that it had all the motion sensors and stuff, which nobody had before. So they set a precedence with that.
Right.
Even though it was kind of childish and it wasn't completely worked out or ironed out yet. But it definitely led to PlayStation's Kinect and or Xbox's Kinect and PlayStation, whatever they call theirs, But all the motion sensor stuff all came from the Wii. I mean, that was all started by them. I don't know. I know that their next console that's coming out, the NX or whatever, codenamed NX, is supposed to be revealed this year. And from what I've seen, it has like the it's like a upgraded Wii U. It has like a oval screen controller that's like a display as well, kind of like the giant display controllers that they have with the Wii U. But yeah, I don't know, man. If they don't make some kind of giant leap in technology or come out with something, you know, groundbreaking or revolutionary, I don't know how much longer they could hold on. Or I mean, just if you do something well, do it great. Like, the Wii was a good product. I think you could update that better than they did with the Wii U and continue to go on. I know their sales for, like, 3DSs and 3DS XLs are doing great. It's one of the number one rated handheld gaming devices. They just made a big partnership with Sega, so a lot of Sega games are coming out on it, as far as like Sonic the Hedgehog and all those games. So I don't know. I don't know what the future holds for them. I mean, I think easily right now, Nintendo's properties that are famous and popular could be ported to mobile devices and sold for $3.99 a pop. And you could play Mario Brothers, and the company will make an insane amount of money and not have to worry about producing a console anymore. But I could see trying to carry yourself into the far, far future. I just don't know if there's still room left with Xbox and PlayStation the way that they're running right now.
I think you're right, but I think there's several glaring problems from the Wii to the Wii U. The biggest was the graphics, Sean. The graphics were exactly the same from the Wii to the Wii U. I don't care what anybody tells me about the specs of these consoles. It was garbage how the graphics were the same. It was embarrassing. Also, the controllers and how complicated it was to just do anything. How you needed Wii controllers for some games, and they put it in like fine print on the back of some games that you get. So this would happen to me, and I know several other people. I talked to people at GameStop. You would buy a game, you come home, and like, oh, you need a Wii remote. And you're like, where the fuck does it say you need a Wii remote? You look on the back of the box, and in like fine print, it says that. So then you got to go back, buy a Wii remote, you know, and then some games, you need a different kind of controller. They have like a regular controller that kind of looks like the Xbox One controller. And then the big Wii U controller with the screen on it and the buttons, it's very square. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You can only put one of those to each console. You can't have more than one of those, which kind of sucks because that's the best controller. So if you get another controller, it's not as fun because the touch screen is very integrated with each game. So you feel like you're at a disadvantage if you don't get to play with that controller.
Gotcha.
Also, the Wii U does not play DVDs, Blu-rays, nothing. That was another disappointment. Yeah, which is garbage. What's that?
Which is garbage. I mean, that makes no sense. Why would you create anything that's in this genre that doesn't do that?
Right. It makes zero sense. And then I read their statement about that, and it was total bullshit. They said, we know that our customers and people who play our games have several other outlets to play DVDs and Blu-rays and blah blah blah. It's like, that's a fucking cop out. This console,
it's like,
is
saying we know our $400.
Exactly.
And then you're gonna buy another console because this can't be your only console.
Nintendo has, yeah,
you decide to buy this shit, just know it's not as good as your other ones.
Nintendo has a lot to make up to their fans. I'm not a hardcore Nintendo fan. I enjoy Nintendo titles enough that I bought the Wii U, and I totally regret it. It's a waste of money. But I am definitely not jumping into anything Nintendo until I hear a bunch of reviews and I really do research over it, because I was extremely disappointed with the Wii U. And these numbers explain it. I mean, that's literally over 80 million consoles that they didn't sell compared to the Wii. 80 million consoles? Are you kidding me?
A tenth of what they sold. That is a
total failure. So regardless if these rumors are true or not, Nintendo needs to get on the ball. I know they're trying with mobile gaming. Rant over.
All right. Well, moving on. I think Micah put the nail in that coffin. Halo 5's newest multiplayer mode promises The most on-screen enemies in franchise history.
Sean, I've got great news. Do you still have your Halo 5?
Or no.
Did you trade in? I traded in.
Damn. I'm not a Halo fan.
I love Halo. The new multiplayer mode is a Warzone firefight. So I saw after the Halo World Championship, there was this big preview that they were showing of the new multiplayer mode. Uh-huh. And it's essentially Horde, Sean, like Gears
of
War.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and it's massive. So it's just like you take out one wave of enemies and then a whole group of harder ones come and you just see how long it can last. So it's a PvE multiplayer mode for Halo 5. I really want to try this out. Everything that I saw for it on the trailer that they gave after the Halo World Championship looked like a lot of fun. It looked like Halo 3 and ODST, they had this thing called Firefight, which was a Horde mode that was very, very popular. It was very, very successful, and Halo fans have always been asking for it back in a better way. Well, everybody's been waiting for this game mode to come, and it's here. So, yeah, if you have Halo 5, I can't wait to try it. It's not out yet, Sean. They didn't release a specific date. It's just going to come out sometime this summer. That's all that they said. So,
well, yeah, man. When it comes out, if it's decent, maybe I'll have to go pick up a used copy of Halo 5. It might be fun to play.
Yeah, I'm excited to try it out for sure.
Definitely going to give that a look. Keep your eyes open for that. We'll let you guys know if we hear any more updates on that. And then the last bit of news we have this week is Miles Teller confirms he tried out for Han Solo. More than 2,500 actors reportedly met with Disney and Lucasfilm. I saw like tweets and reports from like almost every young like white male actor that I've heard of went out and tried, you know, auditioned for this part. So they're definitely putting their work in. I mean, obviously it's such a big role, such an iconic role. I think you got to really find the right person.
Yeah.
Which he has, you know, the whole reason that this is happening. Han Solo has an upcoming standalone film where it's based on a young Han Solo, pretty much how he came to be, how he met Chewie and how he got the Millennium Falcon and all this other stuff. Miles Teller was considered a top candidate for the part, but he was supposedly eliminated from consideration after meeting with directors Phil Lord and Christopher Miller on the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast is where we heard this.
Yeah, and there was a quote he gave, a statement he gave about this, and he said, and I quote, "I had never seen any of the original Star Wars movies until maybe a month or a couple of weeks before my first audition because I was like, I should check this out." And he laughs. I want to punch him in his fucking little dick for saying that. Why in the world would anybody have any respect for this guy to play this? How do you not see Star Wars?
I don't know.
You don't deserve to play that role then. I mean, you literally saw Star Wars like a week before you tried out for the role. That's pathetic.
Yeah.
But I think there's another problem if he does. I hope he doesn't get casted for it. I don't think he'd be a good role. That's just my opinion. Because the Fantastic Four debacle is still looming over him like a dark cloud. That movie is one of the worst, if not the worst, reviewed on Rotten Tomatoes and a lot of sites is the worst superhero film of all time. So I don't think you really, I mean, he was in Whiplash, which was a very great movie, but
awesome movie.
You can't just go off of that. He's also been in some shitty movies. So,
I agree, man.
I don't, some do you other think people, he'd be good?
Nah, I don't think so. I don't think he'd be good for it.
I don't
he was phenomenal in Whiplash. I don't think he looks like Han Solo at all. Some of the other people that I heard that they had auditioned for it, and no word is at all. I mean, if you want to talk about a tight-lipped movie, like the Star Wars franchise is like the tightest-lipped franchise in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
I heard like Dave Franco, James Franco's younger brother, which he kind of looks like him, so I could see that. Aaron Taylor Johnson, who played Kick-Ass, and he was...
He'd be good.
Yeah. He's kind of similar. I don't know if I could really see him. Let's see. Who was some other ones that I had read about? Miles Teller was obviously one. Nick Robinson, who was Kings of Summer, Jurassic World. He was the older brother in Jurassic World.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe that'd be good. Get an unknown star. Totally. Somebody who's not, like, on the front. Because this Miles Teller, he's in those, God, what movies are those that they're coming out? They're kind of like the Hunger Games, but they're not the Hunger Games at all.
Yeah, it's that Divergent bullshit, whatever it's called.
Fucking dumb. Dumb. I know that they were books, and I had a friend of a friend who read those books and told me what they were about, and I was like, oh, that sounds like the Hunger Games. Like, exactly. Sounds boring. But and I like the Hunger Games, but I don't know. The Divergent never seemed to capture me, the storyline of it. And he's in all those, so I don't think he'd be a good cast for it. I hope Disney really takes their time. They did great with The Force Awakens. You have to nail a casting role, especially for something that important. Like, such a big character like Han. So if they don't nail it, it's going to be bad news. So I don't know.
And you got to know, like, yeah, like, I think an unknown actor, because it's something you're going to get typecasted in no matter who you are. Like, once you play that role, I'm sure you're going to be reprised for other roles later on as Han Solo.
Yeah.
For the rest of your career, you're going to be known as the kid who replaced Han Solo, replaced Harrison Ford or whatever. It followed Harrison Ford his whole career, you know. I mean, he's played a ton of great roles, but, you know, I'm sure most people, when they think Harrison Ford right away, they think Han Solo. And then the other ones also, but, you know, it's definitely a role that's probably going to carry for a long time, and then you're going to have to make time for. So I think good luck to whoever does it. I mean, there's a lot of actors that I think could fill that role pretty well, so. And whoever does it hit the jackpot, basically.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, I would agree. If they bombed it, that might.
That's true.
Not
if
be
you're
the
guy who ruined Han Solo.
Job on it.
You don't want to be
Yeah.
You don't want to be
no
Anakin Skywalker.
All
right. Well, that's our news for the week. We have a quick Q&A we wanted to talk about. Michael, what do you want
to. Yeah. So we wanted to do kind of a Q&A around Batman vs. Superman since it's out now. We wanted to ask you guys, and we'll give you our opinions, Batman versus Superman, do you think, Sean, that this is going to hurt or change how the movie ticket sales for Marvel's Civil War that is coming out after Batman versus Superman? Do you think Marvel is worried about losing ticket sales just because people might think, oh, I'm sick of the Avengers or blah, blah, blah? Or do you think that... Do you think Batman vs. Superman will definitely beat it out in numbers? I mean, just between those two movies specifically, I mean, it's kind of DC vs. Marvel kind of question, but let's narrow it down to specifically these two movies, because Civil War is right around the corner. And
well, I mean, for
think?
Me personally, I'm obviously more excited to see Batman vs. Superman. I'm way more of a Batman fan. I mean, Batman's my favorite superhero fantasy character of all time. And so, obviously, that just gives it points right off the bat. And DC, I've always preferred over Marvel anyways. I have enjoyed the Marvel films for the most part. But I do feel like we're at the end of Marvel's franchise for the most part. I mean, I think we've seen so many variations and different films. And then we're seeing something that's brand new and fresh opposed to something that's kind of running its course. So, I don't know. I think DC is definitely the way of the future, irregardless of what some critics might think. I think it's still... There's just so much stuff coming out from it. I mean, for the next, like, 20 years, there's DC movies coming out built around basically this movie that's coming out, or that came out this weekend. So, I think it's going to hurt it. It seems like they've gone above and beyond to stay out of each other's way. They try to keep... It seems like all the films are pretty separated as far as what times they're coming out. But, I mean, there's gonna be an overlap for sure. I mean, with all the TV shows and movies and comic books and stuff, there's just going to be overlap eventually. But like I said, I feel like DC's got the fresh advantage right now. So
yeah, I think they do. I think that's a great point, Sean. I would agree with you, obviously. Not just because I'm a Batman fan. I don't want people to think that we're just biased. Looking at it from both sides, I think genuinely Civil War, it just doesn't look as appealing as Batman vs. Superman because these are new casted roles for the DC universe. It's not Christian Bale anymore. It's not, you know, it's totally different and new. So they have that advantage until Marvel recasts, which is going to be impossible because they have done an excellent, superb job of casting all of the Avengers. I'm not sure if recasting will help. But yeah, I don't know. I think DC is going to win out, and I think that this will definitely hurt Marvel's sales for Civil War. I really do. Which isn't a good thing, because for DC and Marvel to thrive keeps this golden age alive. So we for want sure. both of them to do well. We always want people to be interested in Marvel and DC movies, because the more that people want it, the better they do in sales. They'll keep making these movies. And I hope this golden age never
ends. Yeah, I mean, hopefully, if anything, it spurs both companies and, like, you know, like they did with the comic book world. I mean, it spurred them both on to make the best content they could because they're strong competitors. So hopefully it continues in the cinematic universe, that they just continue to make each other make better and better films. I think we saw that from the Christian Bale Batmans, I think really set that spark and made Marvel say, okay, we can't make shit anymore. Like, there's a new standard that we have to reach. And I think they did that with Iron Man. And then after Iron Man, it kind of progressed to where, like, these companies are producing these great films. I mean, they're really working hard to stay on top, and hopefully that continues and it makes Marvel do the films that they're doing, and it's made DC push themselves even harder to release this. It's probably why DC's taken so long to get to the point where they're doing Justice League. It's because they've realized they have to step up to the next level, you know, because Marvel did such a great job, and now they're going to have to top that. And if Marvel wants to come back, they're going to have to go on top of the Justice League films. So, you know, it's always a progression, and hopefully it continues to make them be better and better at what they do.
I agree. I think we're right. But yeah, you guys tell us and let us know what you guys think. We're curious. I thought that was a good Q&A for this show.
Like always, we would love to hear you guys' opinions. We're going to try to be better at posting questions and stuff like that, and then we could hear polling questions and stuff on Twitter. If you guys want to reach out to us on Twitter and let us know what you think about DC versus Marvel, more specifically, Batman versus Superman versus you know, Marvel's latest film, we'd love to hear from you guys at 5280nerd on Twitter. You can reach myself at Sean H. Porter, and you can reach Micah at
Vash0077.
Absolutely. And like always, definitely subscribe to us on iTunes, review us, rate us, give us stars. That helps us get out to more people and more people to find 5280nerd and become part of the community, really. And always, you can check out our website at 5280nerd.com. We're always online. You can find our gamer tags if you're playing Xbox in the show notes as well. But yeah, we love you guys. Thank you guys so much for listening. And we'll check you guys next week.
See you next week. Batman vs. Superman. Go see it.